You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So I say D, I say D-O, D-O-D, D-O-D-G, D-O-D-G-E-R-S, team, 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 all.
Yo, 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 Dodger fans, welcome to Locked On Dodgers. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one local sports daily podcast network. Locked On, your team every day. This is a daily podcast covering the Los Angeles Dodgers, bringing you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue. I'm Vince Samperio, Chavez Ravine Fiends, here with Jeff Snyder of Baseball Essential. Jeff, game one out of the way. Dodgers got a win. Not too bad.
Yeah, we have a lot to say about this game. I don't even know how to start, so I'm not even going to say anything pithy right now. I'm just going to say, hi, Vince. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, great to talk to you. We're back together. The Dodgers won last night, fought by the score of 5-1. It was kind of a weird game. The Fox crew after the game kept saying it was an ugly win, but also reminded us that ugly wins don't matter in October. It doesn't matter how you get the win. So we'll get into a bunch of stuff about that game and a little bit about the rest of the series. But before that, a quick reminder to subscribe to Locked On Dodgers wherever you get your podcasts. And when you get in your car or if you're at home, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. All right, there's a lot to get into, as you said. But let's just start it off with the starting pitchers. Walker Buehler struggled with command. Loaded the bases with walks, got out of it. Looked like that could potentially, he could have been done after two innings. He ended up going four, gave up one run. On the other side, Mike Clevinger got hurt after two pitches in the second inning, came out of the game. And I wouldn't say that's exactly where the game turned, but that's a big part of where the game turned.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I mentioned it on Twitter. Walker mentioned it in his post-game press conference, how much that second inning reminded everybody of his disaster inning in Atlanta in game three of the NLDS a couple of years ago. And just like then, people sometimes forget that after that terrible inning against Atlanta, he actually pitched a couple of really good innings after that, and the Dodgers ended up only losing that game by one run. He almost kept them in the game enough to win it. This time, he got a little bit luckier and was able to get out of the inning without the disaster ever happening. And it didn't look likely when he was 3-0 on Trent Grisham with the bases loaded, but he got those back-to-back strikeouts to get out of it, and so the Padres didn't even score that inning, and then he did go two more solid innings, one really solid inning, and then one inning that he had to get through. But getting through four innings on a night when he didn't have anything, when he didn't have command, obviously his stuff was good. He struck out 800 batters or whatever, but getting through four innings with no command and only allowing one run was a big, big deal for Buehler.
Yeah, it was huge for Buehler, huge for the Dodgers. They didn't have to get too deep into the bullpen. Dustin May threw a couple innings, and they went Gonzalez, Trinan, and Jansen to close it out. So, all in all, you know, not too bad on that end. Like I said, Buehler's, the stuff was there, obviously. He had strikeout stuff. He was, you know, when he was throwing strikes, and maybe a couple beneficial calls from the umpire helped him out a little bit, but you know, four innings, one run on what he did, on what, you know, on what, four or five walks. You can't really ask for too much more than that based on those numbers and peripherals. So we'll take it for now. The Dodgers have Kershaw going tomorrow, so it should be a relatively better start than what we got today. I guess transitioning real quick into those umpires, they played us maybe a small part in this. There was a couple borderline calls on each side. In the sense of playing a part in it, it played more of a part for the Padres because they lost their manager who decided to argue at a pretty random time, got ejected. I've on record as saying that I would have liked Dave Roberts to get ejected more in the past, arguing balls and strikes to kind of spark the team, but I do not agree with what happened last night because there's a time and place for it. And in the fifth inning of a close ball game in the playoffs is not the time and place for it.
Yeah, there's not a ton of things you and I disagree on, but that get yourself ejected thing is definitely one of them. I don't think any team has ever thought, oh, my manager got ejected. He must really care. I'm going to play harder for him. And I think that was JC Tingley's idea was I'm going to get my team fired up here. And instead his team gave up a crap load of hits and runs and lost the game that inning. And he was arguing a pitch that actually was outside. For me, the big story about the umpire was that he wasn't more of a story. His zone was actually, there were a couple notable bad calls, but actually there were more bad calls of pitches that were strikes not getting called, which was weird for Lance Barrett in particular, because as I talked about on yesterday's episode, he has the fifth largest strike zone in baseball over the last 3 years. And so we saw a couple pitches where he did expand the zone, and those ones, there were definitely a couple that went in the Dodgers' favor. One of them maybe helped Buehler out a lot in that third inning. He was close to walking Tatis, and instead he ended up striking him out with a little bit of help from the umpire. But for the most part, he had a pretty solid zone, and which I wasn't expecting because he's not a very good umpire. And I thought that was going to carry over to the other bad umpires who are going to be behind the plate the rest of this series. But I don't have that much faith.
Yeah, the problem with Tingler is that you try to spark the team when you're bringing in Matt Strom, and that's not usually the best way to spark a team, is to bring in that reliever. So sucks for him. Good for the Dodgers. On offense, there was some good, some bad. They didn't have a hit through the first five and a third or so. They had a lot of walks, eight or nine walks at that point when they hit that fifth inning. So, you know, for what it was an ugly start. It was a nice fifth inning when they got all the runs. But yeah, Jeff, what would you see on offense, and what would you like to see more of?
Yeah, in a way, it was the sixth inning that they scored the four. The fifth inning, they scored the one unearned run to tie the game. But yeah, you know, obviously I wouldn't want them to take that approach every time because it was kind of stressful. But all in all, it actually worked out perfectly, with the caveat that you obviously never wish injury on anybody. But with Clevinger coming out after one inning pitched, and then the fact that the Dodgers let the Padres stay in the game, kept it that close for as long as they did, meant that the Padres had to throw their good relievers, which helps for game two, and maybe even game three and game four if there is one. Hopefully there won't be. But, you know, the fact that the game was tied into the sixth inning and the Padres starter only went one inning meant that the Padres had to use, you know, Pierce Johnson. He's like their top, other than their closer, he's their top reliever, like the guy they go to. Craig Stammen is another guy who they go to when they need big innings. And so the fact that the Dodgers had to get all those good guys in the game and still end up winning the game kind of worked out perfectly for the Dodgers.
Yeah, the biggest part of today was going to be getting into the bullpen. Obviously, the Clevinger injury helped that more than their offense did. They also faced a guy that they had never faced before, and that nobody above A-ball had ever faced before. And he did a pretty good job of shutting them down. But if they would see him again, I don't think that would be the case. And they saw a lot of the arms that the Padres have, and having to go to the bullpen in game one could work for them like it did in the first series, when it's only a three-game series, and a five-game series, where if you want to stretch this thing out to five games and play 5 days in a row, you know, you're not going to be able to have guys pitch 5 days in a row. So it was good to get into the bullpen, regardless of how they got into the bullpen, and good to see, like I said, a bunch of these guys, familiarity-wise. They've seen a bunch of them already, but to see them again in this situation is better. And the fact of the matter on the offensive side is that the Dodgers hit the ball pretty hard a few times in the early innings. Will Smith in the first inning right off the bat had 107 off the bat that would have scored a run. Tatis made a nice diving catch. And then Seager had hit one hard off Weathers. That was 99 off the bat. That just happened to be right at Grisham. So they were making hard contact. And then all through the night, they were making hard contact. This stadium seems to be playing as it was for most of the year when the Dodgers weren't there. And that's not being conducive to fly balls and home runs. We'll get a little bit more into that. But before that, let's talk about Postmates. Let's just face the facts. You're going to be at home most of these days watching Dodger playoffs in the next, hopefully the next 3 weeks or so. And you might get hungry during those games, or you might need something to drink during those games, or you might just need, I don't know, some I don't know. Is there any, I don't think they sell anxiety medicine over the counter, but if they did, Postmates could bring it to you, and Postmates can bring you pretty much anything you want 24/7, 365 days a year. All you need to do is get the app, download it, browse whatever you want, the restaurants and local businesses, track your delivery in real time, and get anything you need within the hour. And right now you can get $100 of free delivery credit for a limited time. All you have to do is download the Postmates app, use the code Locked On, and you'll get $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. That's code Locked On for $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. Download Postmates and save with code Locked On. Before we get back into our offensive discussion, let's have a obscure former Dodger discussion of sorts. The easy one would have been Skip Schumacher, since he took over as manager after Jace Tingler was ejected. But we've already done Skip Schumacher in the past, so I went to the year he was with the Dodgers, 2013 Dodgers. And man, we've done a lot of those guys as well. But one guy we haven't done, who maybe isn't as obscure, but in the grand scheme of things, he is an obscure former Dodger, and that's Mark Ellis. Mark Ellis was with the Dodgers in 2012 and 2013. Spent most of his career with the A's before he came over, or he went to the Rockies, then came over to the Dodgers. Finished his career with the Cardinals. He was just one of those guys, you know, a generic guy, an obscure former Dodgers, and a perfect encapsulation of what Mark Ellis was. Some notes from his Wikipedia page. He had a career 991 fielding percentage, the fifth best all-time for a second baseman in MLB history at the time of his retirement. The cool thing is he went to high school with WNBA star and NBA coach Becky Hammon. They were each voted the male and female class athletes of the 95 class. So that's pretty interesting and cool. But yeah, it's, in terms of his career, just a pretty nondescript career, a nice solid career, you know, a long career, but wasn't really a star at any point, and was just kind of, you know, one of those guys that you kind of need. And he had some good times with the Dodgers. Had a weird injury, I believe, in 2012 after a hard slide he got hit into, and he had I forget what it was, but it was a weird injury. He ended up missing a lot more time than they thought. Then he came back the next year and had a pretty decent year for the Dodgers. But yeah, that's Mark Ellis. Jeff, you got anything on him?
My main memory of Mark Ellis is he was kind of the prototypical number two hitter from my childhood, back when the two hitter's job was to move the leadoff runner over. And I remember the first time I ever saw Mark Ellis play for the Dodgers in person was their third game of the season in 2012. And it was a game in San Diego my wife and I went to. And the top of the first inning went single by D. Gordon. D. Gordon steals second. Mark Ellis grounds out to second to move D. Gordon to third. D. Gordon scores on a Matt Kemp sack fly. And I remember, like, the child in me that grew up with small ball thought, oh, that was the perfect inning. You know, these days I've learned to appreciate a 3 or 4 run inning more than a 1 run inning. But at that time I remember thinking, man, Mark Ellis in the 2 spot, that's perfect. And so that's my main Mark Ellis memory.
And that perfectly segues into our continued conversation on the offense. Small ball, I guess if that's what you want to call it, what the Dodgers did in the 6th inning. The barrels are overrated. We're out. A lot of weak contact that ended up finding holes or getting through. And, you know, the Dodgers put up 4 runs, and that's put away the game right then and there. And expanding on the other point, where the Dodgers had a lot of fly balls that were hit hard, that were hit far. A couple, one was 390 feet out, one was a 400 foot out. So this stadium is playing a little different than it was when the Dodgers were here. Not sure if that's just because of stronger pitching in this first game, or if the weather or whatever else has kind of changed. Because the Dodgers put some balls out of the stadium when they were played against the Rangers. We're having a little bit of trouble last night. So we'll see if that continues, if that's a trend. But it's also a good thing for the Dodgers. You know, obviously the Padres have a strong offense, and they're able to hit the ball out of the park as well. And although they didn't really have any close calls to hitting the ball out of the ballpark, they may in the future games. And it bodes well that the Dodgers can still score runs without hitting a home run.
Yeah, and honestly, if it comes down to a series where home runs aren't going to be a factor, I think that strongly favors the Dodgers, because the Dodgers do have good hitters. They do hit a lot of home runs, but they have a lot of good hitters too. And we saw, you know, some of them, they might have to change their approach a little bit, because obviously some of those ones were fly balls. And if they hit more line drives, I don't know if this a switch you can flip or not of, okay, we're not going to get home runs, so let's adjust our launch angle by 6 degrees and go for the hard line drive instead of the hard fly balls. It's probably not that simple, but I assume there's some adjustments they can make. And I think, we saw it. The Dodgers, their offense is too good to hold them down for 9 innings, even if they're not going to get home runs. And actually a thought that I had during this game was, you know, and I'm definitely not counting any chickens before they hatch, and I'm not cursing anybody. Remember, curses don't exist. But if it were to come down to a Dodgers-Yankees World Series, I think playing in this stadium where home runs are suppressed definitely plays in the Dodgers' favor, because the Yankees are basically just home runs. And so if they don't have the good hitters the Dodgers have, they have the power hitters. And if this field can hold the Yankees' bats in, that could bode well.
Yeah, and from what we've seen from all the playoffs, this is the one stadium that is holding balls in. At least it was last night. Balls have been flying out of Dodger Stadium. Balls were flying out of Petco. Balls were, kind of flying out of in Houston, but that's obvious. And, you know, the Dodgers are built for that. They obviously did hit a lot of home runs, but they also are able to score other ways, as they've shown. And they're going to have that plate discipline, all those walks. You know, it's not easy to lay off pitches. Sometimes they're drawing walks, had guys on, a lot of foot traffic. That's always going to bode well for the offense. So they can keep that up. They should be fine the rest of the series. We're not sure who's starting game two for the Padres yet. You know, Davies is one guy that could do it, and he's done well against the Dodgers in the past. You know, Chris Paddock is another guy that could be able to pitch tomorrow. He has not fared well against the Dodgers in the past. So either way, the Dodgers are sitting in a good position. Winning this game was huge, based on the fact that they were able to get into the bullpen. Padres lost their number one guy, which is unfortunate for them. And the Dodgers have faced all these other guys that they're going to face from now on. So bodes well for the offense. Hopefully they can keep that going. Let's get into the bullpen now. Dustin May did throw 2 innings. That essentially puts him out of a game 3 start. We got a question from our friend, I believe. Yes. Ace 11 Daily. He asks, who's more likely to go game 3, Gonsolin or Julio? Would one piggyback the other? Would May be the starter in game 4 if needed? So let's get into the starting pitching beyond Kershaw tomorrow or tonight.
Yeah, I have a hard time seeing them planning on a piggyback start, just because they already had to use one of their 5 starters in relief, and it's hard to see them going into it with the plan of doing that. May did only throw 27 pitches, and so obviously some of it will depend on what happens in game 2. Because if the Dodgers go into game 3 up 2-0, you could see them maybe adjusting it. And especially if they get, a lead in game 3, just say, okay, we're going balls to the wall. I don't know if we can say that on this show. I just did, though, to win this game and put the series away. So obviously game 2 will have some impact on it. I don't know. I expect probably Gonsolin at this point to start game 3. Since it won't be May, but I could see it going either way. I think I trust Gonsolin more against this Padres lineup right now, and maybe that's all I'm going on, but that's my guess, would be Gonsolin for game 3.
Yeah, I think Gonsolin, the main point for him starting game 3 is, at this point, we know what he's going to get you. You know, at the very least, he's going to give you 5-6 innings just based on what we've seen from him throughout the whole year. Whereas Julio is a little more of a wild card. He has a higher ceiling, I would say, but the floor is a little bit lower on him. He could go 3 innings or 4 innings and give up a couple runs, or he could give you 7 shutout. He could go either way. So I think the other fact of the matter is that Julio, he's already came out of the bullpen. Potentially if they need him to come out of the bullpen after Gonsolin, that wouldn't be ideal, but it would be possible. And, you know, the Dodgers got to obviously play game by game. If they win tomorrow or tonight with Kershaw on the mound and he goes pretty deep and their bullpen's pretty rested, then they're set up well for the rest of the series where it kind of doesn't even really matter how they go about it because they have enough arms to fill the last 27 innings if they needed to go to a game five. And with Dustin May throwing two innings yesterday, that would set him up for probably a game five start, not a game four start, just based on the fact that they would hope to use Gonsolin and Urias in game three and four if it goes that far. So the Dodgers are, you know, like I said, set up pretty well. In general, they haven't really thrown too many guys. We haven't even seen Jake McGee pitch this postseason, I believe, and a couple other guys. But yeah, hopefully Kershaw goes out well tomorrow and they can keep the bullpen limited, and it helps them for a game five where they may need all hands on deck if it were to go that far. The other part of the bullpen was Victor Gonzalez getting a key spot, seventh inning, shut it down, did give up a double when he came back out in the eighth, but Blake Treinen looked really good and very nasty and shut things down against the middle of the Padres' order, and then Kenley Jansen got the last two outs of the game. So, you know, if you could go according to plan, getting your starters and or May, Buehler and or May getting through six, and then getting Gonzalez, Treinen, and Jansen to close it out, that's pretty close to script as you can get right now with the Dodgers.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, obviously we're hoping for a deep game from Kershaw, but they're almost approaching the point where they might need to take him out early just to get some relievers some work, especially if the game's not super close. You know, because like you said, last week in the wild card series, they didn't have to use, you know, obviously they used more guys, but game one, Julio piggybacked on Buehler, and so they only used a couple of relievers. Game two, they only used Gratterall, and then that was it. And then they had whatever it was, 4 days off, and now they have a lot of guys who haven't pitched much in a while. And so, you know, I'm kind of hoping the Dodgers jump out to like a 7-run lead, and Kershaw goes six solid, and then they just get some guys some work just to. It's probably not likely in a postseason series that they'll just get work, but it's interesting at this point in a series to be thinking, wow, the Dodgers need to figure out ways to get their relievers in some games.
Yeah, and the other part of it, you know, if they were winning tomorrow and Kershaw, let's say, goes seven, not that they would, but they could consider a bullpen game three, just to not necessarily get guys work, but we've seen their bullpen games be very effective before. And, you know, you can get Gonsolin out there for a little bit and you know, not have a little bit shorter leash if that's the case, and get some other arms in there. So, like I said, this game one, the way it went, opens up a lot of doors for the Dodgers in a few ways, offensively and pitching-wise. So, yeah, I guess last thing we have is, you know, we don't get to talk about the roster when it comes out until after the game. The roster changes were Edwin Rios and Keibert Ruiz are off the roster. Dylan Floro and Gavin Lux were added. We weren't really sure why the switch from Rios to Lux at first. We found out later that Rios had a groin injury suffered on Sunday's workout. He probably wasn't going to be available for the series, so that's what made the switch. But the Floro move, not that surprising at all. And then Keibert move, keeping Gore over Keibert, it's a little surprising. But Dave Roberts said that Will Smith is still going to DH tonight and when Barnes is catching Kershaw. So as long as it doesn't affect that, I don't mind keeping Gore then.
Yeah, absolutely. And with Smith DHing, worst case scenario, if Barnes gets hurt, Smith shifts to catcher and they lose the DH. But at that point, you know, you have a bigger bench, and so you can pinch hit for the pitcher spot, or even, you know, if Kershaw's cruising and you know, let him bunt or let Kershaw swing away, you know. It's not that big a deal if that happens. Obviously, you know, an injury to the catcher is a very unlikely scenario anyway, even for as tough a position as it is. You know, catchers don't leave games with injury that often, and so it's most likely a non-factor. And I maybe would rather, I don't know, with Rios being hurt, it's not like there's anybody else who really, really deserves that roster spot. You know, Zach McKinstry is really the only other option. And so I think what they have makes sense, and Gore is probably never going to get into a postseason game with the Dodgers, or at least not because he needs to, maybe just because they decide to put him in at some point, but it doesn't hurt to have him there in case on the off chance that it does come up that they need him.
Yeah, there may be a close game. They may need him. The thing that hurts about Rios is that realistically Gore, I mean, obviously he's faster than almost anybody in the lineup, but Justin Turner would be the guy you kind of think who gets on base a lot that would need maybe a pinch runner if he gets on first, and they need a gapper to score him. That takes Rios out of third base. You have a lot of guys that can play there, but, you know, Max Muncy didn't have that great of a time at third base this year. Matt Beatty can play there, but isn't completely 100%, you know, comfortable or trustworthy there. And then you'd have to move around Kike and Taylor. So we'll see what happens. Hopefully that doesn't happen. If the Dodgers don't need Tan score this series, that's a good thing.
Yeah, and like you said, I think the lack of Rios makes Gore's appearance less likely because, like you said, Justin Turner is the obvious guy to pinch run for. But if that means taking him out on defense, then it's got to be a situation where you really, really need that run.
Yep. All right, Jeff, I think we covered everything. Do you have anything else you want to expand on?
Just that Kenley looked pretty good. His velocity was up a little bit from where it was the other night. Still not in the, you know, 92, 93 range where we'd like him to be, but he had good location. He was 90 to 91, seemed to have decent movement. He got a strikeout and a jam shot ground out. And so as much as you could ask for from him with this stadium and apparently it being impossible to hit home runs, maybe that helps with Kenley in the postseason too. Even if he does occasionally miss a spot, he might get a deep fly out instead of something disastrous. So that's good. And bringing him in with a four-run lead means he's probably, even though he didn't throw a ton of pitches, that probably means he's not pitching in today's game. And that's, you know, not necessarily a bad thing. It is supposed to be warmer in Arlington, not by a ton, but, you know, 7 or 8 degrees warmer today than it was for last night's game. And so that might affect, it was partly cloudy and coolish for game one, and it's supposed to be less, you know, clear and a little bit warmer. And so I'm interested to see if the ball flies differently in game two than it did in game one with the slightly warmer weather, because, you know, those few degrees, I mean, Max Muncy's ball 400 feet may have been 405 if it was a little bit warmer, and that's a home run.
Yeah. So the weather can definitely dictate things a little bit, and we'll see how that all goes. That'll do it for today's episode. Thank you all for listening. We appreciate all of you that listen and continue to listen. If you're not listening 5 days a week, maybe add an extra show every week, and that'll help us out. That'll help you out because you'll get to listen to us an extra time a week. And especially now in the playoff times, there's a lot of good stuff. I mean, just in the last couple of days, we had Joe Davis. We had a Padre fan and host of Locked On Padres, and then now you get us to today. I mean, it's just been a cornucopia of great things this week on Locked On Dodgers, so continue to listen.
And I do think with if you haven't listened to the Joe Davis episode, you should go back and listen. It was Monday's episode. I noticed a lot of things watching this game, the way Davis interacts with John Smoltz and stuff, things that Joe brought up when I was talking to him that I had a little bit more insight in from that conversation. So, you know, not to toot my own horn, but toot, toot. It was a pretty cool interview, so you should check it out if you haven't. And if you have, download it and listen to it again.
Yeah, go check that out and look for those things that Jeff's talking about. Like I said, thank you all for listening. You can follow us on social media, Twitter and Instagram at Locked On Dodgers. Jeff is on Twitter at SnyDog. I'm at Vince Samperio. Other ways to get a hold of us, if you're not DMing any of those accounts, is voicemail or text at 323-863-LOCK or email lockedondodgers@gmail.com. We're here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be with us when you get in your car or if you're at home. Tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. Have a good one.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.
D. I say D-O. D-O-D-G-E-R-S. The team that's all heart,
or heart and all thumbs, they're my Los Angeles, your Los Angeles, our Los Angeles.
Do you think we'll really win the pennant?
Bye!